is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Joseph Sternberg, writing for the Wall Street Journal, he's a member of the editorial board. He writes political economics, and his column and Joe take us to Hamburg, Germany, because I learned from Joe that is the origin of the very successful politician who is now Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, much in the news because of Ukraine conflict, because of German armaments, questions about warplanes, questions about NATO working together, also questions about Olaf Scholz in Beijing. Olaf Scholz now touring South America looking for support for the war in Ukraine, but he begins in Hamburg. Joe, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. Where is Hamburg, and what did you learn traveling to Olaf Scholz Foundation City? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Well, I mean, Hamburg is a really interesting story that I think sheds a light both on Olaf Scholz and on Germany's current predicament with Russia policy in general. It's a city in the north of the country on the Elbe River. It has for centuries been a major trading center, and today is one of the larger ports in Europe. In fact, there was recently a controversy over an attempt by a Chinese company to invest in one of the terminals in that port. But it's very active when you go there. I mean, one of the sights you can see is to take a harbor tour that will take you up around all of these enormous container ships. So it is Germany's outward link by sea with the rest of the world. And it also was a heartland of something called the Hanseatic League, dating all the way, but nearly 1,000 years to the Middle Ages, which at the time was a very successful free trade bloc. It was sort of a confederation of cities and city-states all around the Baltic and the North Sea, stretching from the east coast of England all the way into Russia. This was really the birth of Germany's trading relationship with Russia. And so, I think that I came away from this visit with the conclusion that it's important to understand this history, partly because it kind of explains a lot about the contemporary German economy and how outward-looking and trade-oriented it is, and also specifically about the long history of trading ties with Russia, which, of course, I think have for a long time bedeviled that relationship and have really come to the fore more recently since the Ukraine war started with issues of energy, and then also the sort of historic sympathy or relationship between Germany and Russia, which I think has proven so complicated, especially with controversies like last week's decision, very, very belatedly by Chancellor Olaf Scholz to finally authorize the shipment of advanced German battle tanks to Ukraine. I think one of the reasons that one of many reasons that issue is so complicated for Germany has to do with a lot of this economic and cultural history of the relationship between Germany and Russia.
I note that I'm looking at the map because I've never been to Hamburg, that it's on the Elbe River, upriver from the North Sea. So it's a very protected port. They have access without the risk of being on the North Sea. At the same time, I believe this is either part of or at the edge of the very famous Schleswig-Holstein, which people have fought wars over. This is a battlefield, I mentioned, for much longer than there's been a German state. Do the Hamburgians see themselves as quite separate from the rest of Germany, from the rest of the German city-states? Do they have an understanding of the world that is profoundly different, say, than if you came from Berlin or from Munich?
Well, technically they are separate because, of course, Germany is comprised of 16 federal states equivalent to U.S. states, but three of those are cities, sort of the equivalent of Washington, D.C., if it were a state, and Hamburg is one of the three. The other two are Berlin, the capital, and then Bremen, which was also a major center of the Hanseatic League. And the fact that Hamburg and Bremen maintained their city-state status even to modern times, I think, is partly related to the significance of those cities historically as part of this regional trading bloc that goes back to the Middle Ages. So this is very much a part of the contemporary fabric of the city. And I mean, you don't want to overemphasize that because I'm sure that there are many people who live there today who are aware that Hamburg is a separate federal state, but, you know, it's not as if everyone you encounter there is constantly talking about the history of the Hanseatic League and these medieval trading arrangements. But it definitely does understand itself to be a city in a region that is very dependent for its prosperity on its trading links to the outside world. And I think that has always been characteristic of that part of the country, Germany in particular. And so, yeah, perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that some of these issues seem to weigh particularly heavily on a federal chancellor who hails from that region.
I concentrate on the Zeitenwende speech that made in late February of 2022, which at the time was taken as a way of illustrating that Germany was leaving the past and moving into the present with regard to Russia and the threat of Russia and its ally China. That was Ostpolitik. But there's reporting, Joe, and you support the reporting, that there's mixed opinion in the SPD about whether Ostpolitik is gone forever. Is that correct? Is there a hesitation here, trying to find a way back to some working relationship with Russia's energy fields?
Well, I mean, certainly the most recent crisis on all of this was the issue of the battle tanks, finally seems to have resolved itself last week when Chancellor Scholz said that Germany would send 14 Leopard 2 advanced battle tanks and would also lift its export ban on other European countries like Poland that own the German-made Leopards and also want to send their stock to Ukraine. Now, I think that what the months-long fierce debate within Berlin about these Leopard tanks revealed is the Chancellor Scholz did last year set in motion this turning point, this Zeitenwende in German foreign policy. And now Scholz has kind of fallen behind his own turning point. Other German politicians seem to have turned faster. And so the dynamic that we saw with the tanks is that you had fierce pressure from the Green Party, which is one of his partners in the coalition government. You had fierce pressure in favor of tanks from the Free Democratic Party, which is the third party in Chancellor Scholz's coalition government. You had fierce pressure in favor of the tanks from the Conservatives, the CDU party, which is in opposition right now. But Chancellor Scholz himself was quailing at the prospect of sending the tanks, partly because his own Social Democratic Party, the SPD, remains deeply internally divided on this issue. So one of the things that is emerging here is that his turning point speech in February last year unleashed a lot of political forces that he might not have fully understood himself when he delivered that speech. He has turned out not to be able to control a lot of these political forces. And in fact, on the tanks, he seems to have been dragged along by some of these forces that he had unleashed rather than being in control of this turning point that he started.
Most recently, the summary, Chancellor Scholz has been on a tour of South America looking for business and in places to invest. Most recently, the reporting is that Chancellor Scholz has said no to warplanes, no to warplanes. And also, he's voiced his concern about an arms race, which is underway, of course. So he's speaking as if he's not the other Chancellor Scholz. There are two of them here. There's the war drama Scholz, and there's the pieces at hand Scholz. Which is it for any particular day, Joe? Can we tell?
Well, the pattern all along, going back to the beginning, has been that he resists and resists and resists on sending aid until finally he relents. So, I mean, remember at the very beginning of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there was a period there where it looked like the only thing that the Germans were going to send was some helmets. And then there was such fierce pressure that they crossed their what had historically been a huge red line for German foreign and defense policy and started sending actual lethal weapons into a conflict zone in Ukraine. And then after he did that, there was the first battle about tanks. And the result of that was, after a months-long pressure campaign on him, he conceded that Germany would, in fact, send Cheetah anti-aircraft tanks. And then this whole palaver started about the battle tanks, which has now resolved itself with the Leopards. Now, the fighter jet issue is going to be a bit different because it's not clear that Germany actually has anything to send. I mean, the main jets that seem to be under discussion are the American-made F-16s or any additional Soviet MiG jets that might be lying around. Germany does not own any of the F-16s. Its fighter jet is the Eurofighter, the Typhoon. It has export controls on something like 22 of Poland MiG jets, which is kind of a complicated historical issue left over from East Germany in the Cold War. So I guess in theory, Scholz comes into this argument if he wants to try to prevent Poland from sending any of those MiG jets. But what's going to be important about the fighter jet thing is that there is already a big debate about this developing within Germany. It might end up being a bit of a more abstract debate because it's not clear that the result of this would be Germany actually sending anything.
Joseph Sternberg, he writes Political Economics. He's based in London, his trip to Hamburg, but we're going to turn back to London now because there's trouble with the Sunak government. The trouble has to do with a man who was investigated for discrepancies in his tale of his money and what is to be done by the Tory party. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.